It is my distinct pleasure and honor to introduce to you Dr. Rajiv Malhotra. Dr. Malhotra started as a fearless one-man army, challenging the establishment and promoting Indocentric thoughts and ideas. He fought against the misrepresentation of ancient Indian religions and documented the contributions of India to the world civilizations. Today, thanks to social media and the internet, he has become a world influencer and architect of change. And his YouTube videos attract thousands of followers around the globe. He has successfully inspired many intellectual chatris using his term, which he has coined. He will tell us now some more about the book and how not to be intimidated by the size of the book and share some shortcuts to read in the book. It is my pleasure to introduce to you the game changer and my hero, Dr. Malhotra.
So namaste to everybody. I've been to this place several times and always enjoyed this. And thanks to the organizers. Gulcharanji, where are you? You're there. He's a dear friend and he's got his own army of people who have helped him over the years to organize these events. So I'll tell you a little bit about the book and then let's have questions. The book looks big, but you need to read 100 pages and get the whole idea. And that all of you should be able to do. So what you need to do is read the introduction, which is 40 pages or so, and then go to every chapter. The first page is called overview. And that's all you need to read. You don't read the whole chapter, at least not in the first pass. You just read the overview of every chapter. It gives you a summary of the main points that you should know. And then you sort of dwell on it, think about it. What does this say? What is this chapter trying to say? You think about it. And after you've read all the overview pages, which is there are 22 chapters, so you read those pages, then you read the conclusion. And all this you can do in a few hours, that much time you should be willing to spend. And you meditate on it, think of what it is saying. And so in about 100 pages, you'll be able to get the main points of the book. Now, the rest of the details in each chapter are for backup to prove what I said. So, you know, like when you're arguing in court, you give your thesis that I think this guy committed the murder, here's how he did it, he did this, that. And then as evidence you have in the appendix, you have all the testimony, all the lab reports, all the forensics. So that makes it big, but the main argument is actually quite straightforward. So what I've told you is how to understand the main arguments in the book. And then you can decide in the second pass what chapters you feel like reading or not reading. You don't have to read all the chapters. You don't have to read them in any sequence. You can go and read any chapter by itself and it's fine. So it's written in that way. And therefore, don't sort of be intimidated. And when you gift the book to people, and I hope you will do that, please explain to them that they shouldn't just be afraid, just start reading. And the English is very simple. It's like talking to somebody. It's very straightforward. There's no big jargon or anything. There are some images, tables to make it easier, more interesting. So that's how the book is organized. What it's about is now going to be what I'm explaining. The title, Breaking India 2.0, should tell you that this is sort of the same idea, like that India is being broken, not militarily and physically. We are talking about idea of India, the theories of India, the narrative of India is being broken, divided up into conflicts between this caste and that caste, gender, men versus women, this religion versus that religion, this community versus that community, north versus south, whatever. That breaking India is now 2.0 because different people have entered. Different technology is being used, different think tanks have come up than before, and the target in India is the elites. The target is not poor villagers like in Breaking India 1.0. The target was poor villagers, to how to convert them, how to convert poor villagers, how to re-educate them and re-engineer them and make them anti-Indians. It was bottom up, now it is top down. So the Breaking India 1.0 was a bottom-up approach, and Breaking India 2.0 goes to the elite people, industrialists, thinkers, journalists, academic people, people working in our government, military, national security, and trying to infiltrate them with certain ideas. That's very dangerous because these are the people who control the whole machinery of running the country. So the title Snakes in the Ganga is a metaphor, which means that, like, you know, when you are taking a bath in the Ganga, you don't expect danger. You are not aware and not very on board and very cautious about some snake or poison. You know it's all very nice, so everything is pristine. But when you, if somebody tells you there are some hidden snakes, it will concern you because you don't expect that. So this is about hidden threats that you don't see, that you don't expect. And it's about what is the poison, which is the ideology. So it explains part one is the ideology about what we're calling poisonous ideology. What is that? Where did it come from? Why is it? What's the history? Why is it dangerous? Then part two of the book is, where is the nest where snakes are being born and bred and indoctrinated, and snakes are being nurtured? And there, the biggest snake nest that we have discovered is Harvard University. So a large part of this book is telling you what is happening at Harvard University, how they have taken over what Oxford used to do during the British time. Oxford was doing all this thinking and knowledge and all this figuring out about India, and Oxford was then training the East India Company officers, sending them to India to rule over India in a certain way, and its doctrines, its ideas were exported everywhere. You know, when Lord Risley came up with the caste system to go and do survey, caste surveys in India during the census, he was basically using work done at Oxford by famous people. When Macaulay was doing his thing, when Max Miller was doing his thing, all of them were going related to the whole ecosystem of the academic world. Similarly, things happening here. New Macaulays and new Max Millers and new Lord Risley type people are being created. And they are Indians now. That is the difference. These are not foreign Gora snakes. These are Indian snakes, brown skin snakes, most of them. Very. So, yeah, good metaphor. So you should now start writing about the brown skin snakes. And you should write about snakes in Lake Ontario.
That should
be
your next book.
Huh? You write this book. You should invite me next time.
In Canada.
You should. So I'm telling you, that's why I'm saying that there are snakes here also. So you should conduct a workshop, and I'll come and have the workshop, but you can promote it to get a lot of people involved. And if there's a large enough gathering, I'll be happy to come. And you can say this is going to be a global event, and we'll bring in all the ministers and all the media and all the politicians and everybody, and we're going to talk about snakes in Lake Ontario, brown skin snakes in Lake Ontario, and also white snakes in Lake Ontario, and so that you can focus on your problems that you're facing. So I've given you a template. That is why I've come up with this thing. So this is, in the south there is, in the river Kaveri there is snakes, and there is crocodiles also, and crabs, and all kind of scorpions. So there are many kind of creatures, dangerous creatures being created. So the idea is to not fight one at a time, one snake at a time. You get this snake, and you fight him, then you get that snake. Idea is to figure out where are they coming from, who's behind it, what is the DNA, the nature of this poison, look at the biochemistry of the poison, which means ideology. Okay? When you do that, then you've understood the problem deeper than just fighting one snake at a time. So what our politicians are doing, what activists are doing is fighting one snake at a time, and they make a very big thing out of it. And they need to understand that this way you'll never win because they keep producing more and more snakes. So you have to go to where the nest of snakes is. Not only we discovered that, we found that the, see, Infinity Foundation I started, and it's 30-year-old project, we were funding places like Harvard because we thought by funding them, we can convert them, change them. But you can't do that. You can't do that. It doesn't work. There's certain agenda, certain DNA, very long history. They'll keep doing it. You fund them and you are wasting your money, and therefore they're actually taking your money and developing more and more stuff against you only. So I stopped doing it. In fact, I started arguing against them. I have so much written against them. While I was funding, I was also arguing against them. We were funding the Indology Roundtable Conference for many years, which was their conference. We were funding visiting professors, two Canadians. One I funded, Sharma, Arvind Sharma from McGill, very nice man. We put him there. And he also concluded that, you know, one man, you fund him, he can't do anything because they're surrounded with all kind of snakes. And then the other was Ashok Atlujkar from Vancouver, somewhere in the West Coast, prominent Sanskrit scholar, also a very good man for us. We put them there, but they cannot change anything. They'll either be quiet and ignored or canceled if they say too much, or they have to join them. That's how it is. It's like you join a company, you cannot overrule the policies and of the boss because you're just working there. So this is not, that was not working. And then I, after giving a lot of criticisms, hoping that in the spirit of free enterprise and free thinking and intellectual freedom, all those nice things they talk about, that they will actually engage those ideas. And I have still, in this book, one chapter, I've summarized my 30-year of encounter with Harvard. And still, when you look at all those points, they still haven't been addressed. So they would just start ignoring me. So I started ignoring them and no more funding. And I wound up my funding at Harvard. A few years later, for a few years, there was a vacuum. Nobody was funding these projects at Harvard. But then they went to the Indian billionaires in Bombay. And they caught hold of them. Kisi ka beta beti, they put them in admission. Some they got because it was good for business. You know, you donate money, your name is on the building, it's very prestigious. Then you join some committee, some board, and then, you know, you become famous, and then you are sitting with Bill Gates on some board, and you're fitting with all these famous people, and this is good for your reputation. So some people did it for that. Some were maybe ideological also. They were ideologically committed to that point of view. I don't know. You can't really tell what was the motive of each person. But there are many possibilities. So today, the fact of the matter is that our billionaires have started centers in Harvard named after their families. There is a Lakshmi Mittal and Family South Asia Institute, which does the work that I used to fund called the Indology Roundtable. Now it is called South Asia Institute. But they're bringing in such horrible people. They're bringing in people who have no qualms about hating India and hating Hindu Dharma. And they're bringing these people. And then there is the Mahindra Humanities Center, which is run by one of the prominent postmodernists who's quite clear about deconstructing the idea of India and all that stuff. Very clear about it, famous for it. And then there's Piramal, who's put in a lot of money for public health and given them Harvard office in India, in Mumbai. And then there's Bajaj, there is Tata's, there's all these people. We're naming all the people. We're not saying you are the snakes, but we are saying you're feeding the snakes. You're putting food in their mouth. It is your money and your family name giving them credibility. Maybe you are innocent, you don't know, and I agree it's your right to fund anybody you want. It is your right to fund. It's your money, you can do whatever you want with it. I can't stop it. And there's nothing illegal about funding some ideology. But it is nothing illegal for me to point it out, to criticize you. I mean, just like they have a right, you're funding people who have a right to criticize my culture, my heritage. It is their right. But I have a right to criticize them also, which is all I'm doing. So I am giving knowledge to my people how to argue back. And Harvard is giving knowledge to their people how to argue against our culture. So we are also able to do what we are doing, and they're able to do what they're doing. That's how the game is. But the moment our people understand that those guys, you know, rather than because they're big shots and Harvard got a big name and these industrialists are big and all that, rather than blindly thinking that they're all great people, the moment enough of our people start saying, hey, who are you? Who are you to speak like this? Who are you to represent us and misrepresent us? We don't buy this. I mean, maybe you're big and famous and powerful, you have a lot of money, but the point is that this knowledge about our culture is wrong. And this book explains to you why it's wrong, how to argue back. The moment enough of our people start doing that, it shakes them up because they're very conscious of their reputation. The one big weapon we have is that the opponents we have to fight in this case, unlike the church doing things in the villages in India, were not concerned about reputation, but Harvard is concerned and all the billionaires who feed them are very concerned about reputation, and their reputation is only good as long as you keep supporting them. The moment you withdraw that support, they have to worry. That is our weapon and that is our strategy, is to make public that we are not happy with what they are doing. So this is your call, this is what you guys have to do. So now I've told you the part two. The part one was just the ideological stuff. I can get into that in more detail. Part two is the whole knowledge factory or the nest of snakes. Sampo ka ghosla. Ganga got a snake nest inside, not only some snakes. That's big stuff. Now the third part is how these snakes are exported to India and what they do when they are there. So then we have talked about various Indian universities like Ashoka University, Kriya University, Tata Institute of Social Sciences, Azim Premji's foundation is running things, Godrej family is running some things. And then there are think tanks, and then there are the American consulting companies are bringing these ideas into the corporate world in India through HR departments. And some of the people in the Indian planning are planning commission type people in Niti Aayog are consultants from the same places in the United States mainly. So part three explains how all this is entering India. And the conclusion tells you the role of the World Economic Forum, which is another very prestigious body. Everybody is jumping up and down, lining to go there, be invited, and be have a picture in Davos, because then it means you're becoming a world famous person, you know, you're a global thinker and all that, and how that brand name is being used also in a Breaking India capacity. That is also a very important part of the story. So now just a little bit more on the first part, which is what is the ideology in this poison? Because it's not, this book is not about the Christian conversion, which we've already talked about, and there's enough activists who are, you know, making noises on that. But now it is something called wokeism, critical race theory. These things are a Marxist idea applied to American race problems, and it's good in the American context. The blacks need help, and the blacks can do use whatever theory will work for them. I sympathize with them. When this George Floyd thing happened, he was killed in a brutal way. I sympathize with Black Lives Matter. We sent them funding. We spoke for them. But what happened is that this critical race theory, which was set up to help blacks get their empowerment from whites properly, it was done, that got appropriated and turned against India. For Marxists did that, Indian leftists did that. They brought in Dalits and said that you are the blacks of India. And the non-Dalits are your enemy and they are the whites of India. So like the blacks have to fight the whites to get equal rights, you have to go fight the country, the whole country. And the original sin, it's like a church, you know, the original sin is the Vedas. The Vedas are the original sin. That is where all this thing is buried, and you have to take it out and kill it and get rid of it. And so this whole project became known as critical caste theory. It was in America, it's critical race theory. It became known as critical caste theory. And critical caste theory says basically that This caste abuse is built into the Indian thought process from the very beginning. We have a whole chapter 6 giving a response to this, because originally it was Varna and then Jati, and then how it got turned into caste, and therefore you can't blame this current caste as though it was there in the beginning. So things adapt, things get distorted in every religion. You find things happening in the church. You have so much sexual misconduct in the church, and church went through history of slavery, but nobody says dismantle the church. You solve the problem in the church, you don't say dismantle it. And there's so many problems in Islam, you don't have dismantle Islam going on like that. You have so many problems in the Sikh religion. I mean, you have caste system in the Sikh religion because the Jats are caste. They are very chauvinistic, very proud that we are the superior, the Jatta and the Jatti. And all the songs are like that, you know. The Jat did this and the Jatti did that. And this is very deep, chauvinistic, pompous, you know, aggressive, thing. And it is a caste-based. So the movement of all the stuff that goes on here is Jat-based. It is not the other, it's not the rest of the community. And they can't blame Brahmins and all that they like to blame, because there are no Brahmins in Punjab. I'm from Punjab, there's no Brahmins there. I never saw a Brahmin there. You have the Punjabis own Khatri and Bedi and Kapoors and Jats, and they are different castes within Punjab. They're not within Sikhism, and they're not from some, they're not Vedic Brahmins coming and doing anything wrong to them. So this business of how things have adopted and modified and distorted over time happens in every religion. Okay, these were not the original tenets of Guru Nanak when he started. These things happened later. Some of them happened under the British, very mischievously. Some of them happened in the 1900s, some of these things. So one can take this problem to any faith and start, but only in the case of Hinduism, they are saying you have to dismantle the original structures, which means Vedic structures and all the Hindu systems. You have to dismantle all of them, because unless you dismantle them, you cannot solve this problem. Now, the matter has become very serious in the United States, because they have started attacking the IITs as caste institutions. There's a book by a Harvard professor called Ajanta Subramaniam that says that the IITs, the merit is not a true merit. The merit is actually caste privilege that Brahmins get, and Dalits are oppressed in IITs because it's a Brahmin institution, and and this is not a merit-oriented thing. So this type of discourse, this type of negative thing, is harming the IIT reputation. If you are watching my YouTube, about a week or two ago, I had an episode where I interviewed 3 IIT Madras professors. Please watch that. It's 45, 50 minutes. Watch it, and it'll open your eyes on what is going on, Harvard attack on IITs. Now, somebody else, this is published by a Harvard professor and Harvard University Press, which is the most prestigious academic press in the world. And so this is the syllabus. They're talking about it all the time and giving conferences, going to all the universities, and everybody lapping it up because Harvard has said it. And then there is a Suraj Yengde, who is a Dalit, and he's done a lot of this black and Dalit bye bye. So he's changed his hair to have this big afro. And so he goes around saying that Dalits are blacks because he looks like that. But I found a picture of him when he first joined Harvard having normal Indian type hair. So I put in, this is the Suraj Yengde Indian, and this is honorary black. So at one time we used to make fun of people like Bobby Jindal trying to become honorary white in order to enter the favors of the American political system. And now we have people trying to become honorary blacks to get ahead in their career. So he's been adopted by Harvard as their poster boy. They love him and they put him out everywhere. So we have a lot of stuff on him, a whole chapter on him. And then there is another Indian who started something called Equality Labs in New York. And Equality Labs says that they claim that they have done these surveys on the tech industry in the United States and found that tech industry is full of caste abuse, according to them. That the Brahmins are dominating, and all these, the head of Google, the head of Microsoft, and all the top managers, all these billionaires who have said to be very famous in movers and shakers of Indian origin in the American scene, they're all Brahmins and oppressing Dalits. And so they filed one case in against Cisco, which is a tech company in Silicon Valley. They filed a case abusing the, accusing them of caste abuse and racism. And of course, Cisco defended it, but that these fights going on now. So now they're going to more and more companies in the US and government bodies and universities and asking them to do a caste census. Caste census. Reminds me of Lord Risley. This is called the return of Lord Risley. Please make a note of it. The return of Lord Risley, just like Lord Risley took a flexible social structure and built a template of hierarchy on the assumption of abuse and started demanding that people have to fit into that hierarchy, and people were confused. And they, many of the people, when he did his first census, didn't know where they fit. And his team writes that people don't know what caste they belong to in India, many of them. Or they don't agree with where their caste has been located in the hierarchy. He writes about that. And then 10 years later, he repeats the census, then again repeats the census. Gradually, Indians sort of give in and start telling him what he wants to hear, which is that this fellow, this caste abuses my caste, this kind of a conflict. Then he created the hierarchy. Just like Lord Risley did that, now this Lord and Lady Equality Labs, along with the help of these other Harvard professors, are the new incarnation of Lord Risley, and they're going around conducting these censuses and trying to convince the Silicon Valley people and the Indians who work there that these are hierarchy of caste and they are racist, and some of them are whites and some of them are blacks, or the people who are Indians. So this has consequences. They are lobbying that the HR department should enact policies, certain policies. They should hire a caste expert in the HR department, like there's an expert who understands race, and if there's a race bias, his job is to do something about it. They should also hire a caste expert. And who will certify that somebody is a caste expert? They will certify. So they will train anybody and everybody who hates our culture, whether he's a Pakistani Muslim, whether he's somebody from here, there, doesn't matter. They will graduate a whole lot of these people who will become the experts of adjudicating and evaluating caste abuse in companies and certify them and send them to the HR departments to be hired. Good job market they'll create for their own ideology. And then these people from inside the organizations will then have a lot of power to police all this. They also want that the offices in India of the American companies, these companies have big offices in India, tech offices, they should enact the same policy as the parent company. And the outsourcing industry, where you know somebody goes and hires an outsourcing company, they should be having these policies because you don't want to hire racist people. And then there are proposals that the H-1B visa, which is the visa in the US government gives to tech workers, should also be by quota. And they should look at what they should start interviewing you in the embassy in Delhi, you know, whether you are this caste or that caste. So this whole caste awareness in a framework of hierarchy and assumed prejudice and bias and oppression is exactly what Lord Risley started, and we know what the consequences were. But in the case of Lord Risley, it took 50 years for him to turn it into an established fact on the ground where people were starting to look at each other with suspicion. And in the case of today, things move very fast. So at this rate, within 5 years, you will have a very caste-divided Indian tech industry, or an automobile export industry, pharma industry, and all these major industries will all have this kind of problem. So they've started, it's a very serious matter. And I'm not an IIT guy, but I'm standing up and defending them. And the IIT guys haven't had the courage to stand up and defend. I mean, there's one gentleman who saw me, Sunil did a brunch gathering of Indian people in Canada who are successful businessmen, and the idea was that they'll support us. They'll have resources, they can support us. So far we haven't gotten any support. One or two of them were from IIT, very proud, they said. So I said, okay, then why don't you do something? And they said, oh, okay, maybe I'll buy a copy of the book. I said, no, not buy one copy of the book. Do something. Get your people together. And I gave him a proposal. I said that we are writing a small 100-page extract out of this book, and that'll be called The Battle for IITs. And paperback, low price, but we want to give tens of thousands of them away to all the IIT students in India, and that will create effect. They should be told that when you graduate and go out and get jobs, you are likely to face this allegation that you are racist and caste biased, and how to talk back, how to identify it, how to argue back. And they said, oh, okay. I said, now sponsor it. You can have your name on it, sponsor it. We're not into any making money. We're putting our money, our life savings into it. You can print it, you can do what you want, but we want a large scale campaign. So far I haven't had any volunteer. They are IIT guys, very proud of that, but they are not willing to stand up and defend. It's like if you are from Arya Samaj and somebody attacks Arya Samaj and you don't even care to defend. What has happened to our culture? What has happened to our people that they don't even care? They are so selfish. If somebody did that to your family, you would defend, of course. If somebody attacked your particular company, your business, you would defend. You're not going to say, oh, tattva masi, you know, this is, you know, Vasudeva Kutumbakam, Vasudeva Kutumbakam. Oh, you know. So this is what happened to our society, and hence we are where we are, and I'm very disappointed that people are willing to become very emotionally committed, but not put their money where their mouth is, and not be willing to say, okay, here is something of substance we are doing, not just talk, not just we'll think about it. So, and we're not talking about millions of dollars. We're talking about support us, help us. So I have a list of 11 projects. If you want to know how much, I have a list of 11 projects from $50,000 each to $300,000 each that we need to do these projects for this movement to begin and to launch. So, you know, a community can adopt one of those projects and say, that is our project. Somebody should stand up and say, it's my job, I'll get this done. And I'll get all the whatever it takes, and I will make sure you have the resources. Get going on it. So, for instance, one of the projects is to produce Hindi editions of this book, small topics. One is attack on IITs. Another is shame on Indian billionaires. There should be a book like that. Another is on Harvard is a snake nest. It's not Vishwaguru like people think. It is a snake nest. It's like that. Whatever are the main topics that people need to know, we ought to write about it, and we ought to put it in different languages. So we have a project to make documentaries. So you know, you can sponsor any project you want. You can, if somebody were to take the responsibility and say, I'm writing the first check and I'm going to lobby and get more people around, we would really appreciate that, because we need that. That's what we don't have right now.